recruiting animal here on March 17th, 2010. You know, right now, some little kid is thinking, you know what? I'm going to be 50 years old in 2050, and I can't imagine what that's going to be like. But you know what, kid? Being older and being young are the exact same thing. And speaking about being older, you know what today is? It's my third anniversary on the Recruiting Animal Show. And you know what? I got a wonderful surprise gift for this anniversary, and it came from the guest I had on the show just 2 weeks ago, little Timmy Tyrell. And here's what he wrote on his blog. He said, I spent an hour on the phone last week, pause, getting my teeth kicked in. He said, I have to tell you, friends, that I stumbled, something I'm not used to doing. The animal has a well-honed way of sweeping your feet right out from under you. But when I stumbled, it wasn't his fault at all. It was mine and mine alone. You know why, he says? Because I wasn't able to answer some pretty basic questions. Questions, I think, he said, that were pretty straightforward. And frankly, I was out of my element speaking to a radio audience that didn't care how much time I spent helping people for free. They just wanted answers, and rightly so. And I say, thank you, Timmy. Thank you, Tim, because this proves what I told Bill Vick just a year ago, that the Recruiting Animal Show is a show about spiritual liberation. I don't want to sound too inflated, but the message is, look, friends, you don't have to be perfect. You're still a fine human being. And if you come on the show like Timmy, hoping to look good, hoping to look smart, hoping to impress everybody with your subject matter expertise, you'll find out from us pretty soon that you're just another imperfect, ordinary guy like Maureen, like Jerry, like Rayanne, and Indie Andy, and Blake Cannon, and Janice, and the Boy Wonder, and me. And especially the Boy Wonder. He showed how imperfect he was yesterday on the Paul Paris Show. Take a lesson from your mom, pal. She gets it, and you don't. Anyway, my point is, I'm almost done, that on the Recruiting Animal Show, you don't have to pretend you're perfect, because if you try, we'll show you that you're not, and we'll liberate you from the need to be a somebody. Because even if you flop, hey, you'll still be a friend of the show. You know, you always hear people, oh, I'm a bit inflated today. Yes, it's true, but it's my anniversary. You always hear people talking about Zen, and they don't know anything about Zen at all. But what I just said is as zen as you can get. It's as humble as you can get. Being a somebody when you're a nobody. Claiming victory in defeat. And it all happens here in the fourth year of Jerry. Jerry, what show is this?
The Recruiting Animal Show.
Enough! Come on! Give me a break! Oh, boy.
Jerry must be working out.
Something.
Dinosaur sirens or something. It's not even really him.
Will the Minnesota Headhunter come on down? Minnesota Headhunter, are you here?
Come on. Are you here? Can you hear me?
I can hear you. I can hear you, Paul. Welcome back. Third time on the show.
How you doing, brother?
Now, listen, Paul, it's St. Patrick's Day. Do you know that?
Yeah, except for my day was the other day. It's St. Yerho's Day for us Finnish folks.
Oh, you're Finnish with a name like the Big Knees?
He's from Minnesota.
Well, Tibetans. I mean, my grandma. Tibetans.
Okay, you know what? Today's St. Patrick's Day for everybody. Like, we're all diverse here, okay? It's St. Patrick's Day, but I want to warn you, no blarney here. No blarney here. I want you to say it now. Animal, I will not give you any blarney.
Animal, I will not give you any blarney.
Are you calling on a landline?
Don't tell me I got to talk louder or something.
Are you calling on a landline? Answer my question.
Oh, blarney. No, I'm not.
Well, why not?
Because my voiceover internet connection was a little slow, so I called on my cell phone because it's going to sound better.
Oh, gee whiz. Go back and call on the other phone.
He sounds
good. This doesn't sound very good at all.
He sounds fine.
Okay, we'll
Animal,
continue.
Just for a second. Can everybody else hear me okay?
Yep.
It's Kenny.
Okay.
It's Kenny.
Just trust me. Just trust me. When the recording comes out, you'll be a vacancy, okay? Who's making that noise already? You know what? I don't know what I'm going to do about that noise. Anyway, Paul, now is the time that we sing. And we're going to sing a song that Jerry picked, okay? And I'm going to tell you the words. Are you ready?
Wait, do I got to write this down?
No, it's very easy. We're all going to sing. We drink and 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 fight. I think that's how it goes. We'll drink and drink and drink and drink and drink and drink and fight. And then you say, and if I see a pretty girl, I'll sleep with her tonight. And then we say, we'll drink and drink.
We are not singing. I am not playing this reindeer game.
Whatever. We're ready to go. Jerry, are you in on this one since you picked the song?
Yeah.
Maureen, you're Irish, right?
I'm Irish. I'm here.
Congratulations, Maureen, on your Irish National Day. Everybody ready?
Thank you.
Ready.
Okay. Jerry, ready. We'll drink and drink and drink and drink and drink and drink and fight. We'll drink and drink and drink and drink and drink and drink and fight. Paul.
I'm still drinking, dude.
Paul. And if I see a pretty girl, come on, you pussy, I'll sleep with her tonight. We'll drink and drink and drink and drink and drink and drink and fight. Thank you. Okay, Paul, you embarrassed yourself already as a gutless wimp before we even got going.
Wow.
So you might as well go in with the Blarney. Give us your elevator speech, Paul. Give us your elevator. Give us your elevator speech, Paul.
Which one do you want?
What's the hashtag for today?
You know what? I can't hear a word.
What's the hashtag for today so I can Twitter it?
Just animal, 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 like every week.
Hashtag animal.
At animal, at animal, at animal.
No hashtag. No hashtag. Okay.
Right. Okay, let him go with his elevator speech, and we'll grade it after. Come on.
I didn't know you were being so formal today.
Go ahead. Go ahead. Do your stuff.
So, all right, so my name is Paul DeBettings. I've been an IT recruiter in Minneapolis for now 12-plus years, been writing the Minnesota Headhunter blog for almost five, focusing on IT placements, permanent consulting here in Minneapolis, and then do some writing, speaking, teaching, whatever. That's my pitch.
Okay, listen, Paul, I got a question for you. I just saw a video of you that you posted on Twitter, and it was all about a presentation you made about dating and job hunting, and it was really good. And in it, you said that you've been speaking about job hunting for 8 years. I assume that was in your elevator speech. I didn't understand a word you said. But am I right? You've been speaking about job hunting for 8 years?
Yeah, I 8 years ago, I went back to the University of Minnesota as a volunteer. And
yeah, that was a yes or no. That was a yes or no. That was a yes or no, okay?
Yes.
I got a question for you. We all know you're looking for a wife. Haven't any girls thrown themselves at you in that time? I mean, you get up in front of the people, and girls like a guy who's in charge of things. Am I wrong or right?
He sounds cool.
Wrong.
I'm wrong.
Really?
Here, I can't hear anything. Are you there?
You asked me a right or wrong question. I said wrong, and I shut up.
No. Now you have to elaborate. Go ahead.
Look, you're confusing me. I said
just
yes,
listen.
And you
just listen to what I tell you to do, and you won't be confused. Don't the girls come up and talk to you after Jerry? Jerry was a rock musician. Isn't it true they come up and moon around the singer?
It's pretty easy, yeah.
Yeah, come on. And this guy can't pick up a wife out of all those 8 years of audiences. Come on.
Can I explain now, or is it still a one-word answer?
No, you can explain, but you know what? I can't understand why you didn't call on the proper phone. Go ahead.
Whatever. Everyone else is hearing me just fine, including the people on Twitter. So come on now. Let's get into the show. Let's stop screwing around. All right. So here it is.
Screwing around.
Yeah. Oh, good Lord.
You know what? The job board doctor doesn't say it's clear. He says there's lots of static. Okay? So there.
Hearing
he's my pal.
Too, but it's not on my phone.
Okay.
So, just saying it. One of the things is that when you're in a room of 250-some folks and you already know everybody, they either would have already walked up to you or they won't. So, it's not like, you know, I was one of, 15, 20 sessions that night. So it's not like it was you know, Jerry being a rocker for 3.5 hours. So, you know.
No, it's a dumb answer, but, you know, what can I do? I'll leave it. Does anybody want to comment on that? Do you have any tips for him, Jerry?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Janice, go ahead.
When
Janice,
I wanted to meet a speaker, okay, I would go up and thank him for speaking.
Uh-huh.
If somebody wants to meet you, they're going to find a way to meet you.
How old is this guy?
40.
My mom turned 40.
Jeremy, you be quiet. You've
my
already been pulled
looking,
off
she's
today.
Running ads.
No.
Are you on Craigslist? Because she
oh my
is.
God.
I'm not a cougar.
Okay, let's move on. Okay, Paul, I just thought that, you know, I got to tell you something else, though. If you're looking for a girl, you need some sharper clothes. I mean, how much did you spend on that suit that you wore in the video?
Wow, dude.
Wow.
How much? How much? Come on, money, honey. This is your question. How much did you spend on that suit?
Hadash.
He's not going to answer. I think he's
okay, well, listen, I'll tell you. You know what you looked like to me? You looked like a high school teacher. Maybe math, maybe geography. You know, somebody the kids like, but your clothing was not visually attractive, and you want it to be. Go out and spend some money on clothes. That's my advice. Okay?
I appreciate your advice, but, you know, the lighting probably wasn't right. I spent way more on the suit and the shirt than you would have thought, so, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what a lot of money is in Minneapolis. $100, $150. I haven't got a clue.
Oh my God.
Okay, listen here. I want to ask you. So since you're talking about dating and job hunting, is ageism like an issue in this? Because, you know, I put up that picture of you and that beautiful girl on my blog. Anyone can take a look at it at recruitinganimal.com, and it's also on recruitinganimalshow.com. She's very cute, but she's too young for you. I checked out her blog, and she calls herself a 20-something, right? Now, she's too young for you, right? She's 40 years old. She's too young for you.
That's a question so I can answer now. You're filibustering. Kristen is actually a student that I was an advisor for. That's a little bit creepy in my book, for starters. Second of all, she's actually engaged to one of the guys that I'm an advisor for at my fraternity. That also would make it a little bit creepy for me to date the girl, don't you think?
Well, does she have an aunt?
Does she have an aunt?
Oh.
No, she doesn't.
Okay,
went through that.
Now, I know, just coming back to last week, I know there's a guy on the show. We got a surprise guest today here for you for the third anniversary of the show, and he really hated the menopause discussion last week. But I just want to ask, since it's an age issue, are menopausal women with sharp tongues like Rayanne, like, out of the question for you? I mean, are you a bit, like, age discriminatory in that way?
Lord, what kind of a question is that? Okay, so here is – so this I'm looking for somebody – so somebody, there isn't an age thing, but, you know, it's probably someone who's going to be somewhere between 28 and 40. I'm turning 40. You know, I'm looking to stay in Minneapolis. I'd like to start a family. I'm not going to lie about that. But when you say I'm looking for a wife, you make it sound like I'm on a grizzly bear hunt in Canada somewhere. Let's get past the dating stage first. What do you think about that?
Good.
What do I think about it? I think you're evading it. He's evading the question. Okay, but here I got a real business question now about, and I'll let other people on in a second. This one has to do with older IT workers. I discussed it last week. I'm fascinated by it. I read this article by Rita Ashley on Job Search Debugged. And you're an IT recruiter. Am I right? Yes or no?
Yes
or yes. Okay. And she said she went and talked to her contacts in the technology sector, the software companies. And she said they shy away from older workers for three reasons. I want to know if you believe those same things. Number one, hours. You have to work long hours in that business, and the older workers don't want to work long hours, and they say they can, because they're so experienced, they can do as much as the younger guys in the same time. Is that true or false?
I would say mostly true.
They don't want to work long hours. Older workers don't want to work long hours. Is that what you're saying?
Mostly, yeah, but we're stereotyping. You're asking, I mean, I know a lot of older guys who work more hours than the young guys do, but I'm saying generally, stereotypically, yes, correct.
And does that cause, and do guy, Pete, do workers, do employers shy away from people for that reason?
Again, generally, yes.
Yeah, they do. And is that just in IT, or would that, you say, extend perhaps to other businesses as well?
I think that if you look at some of the demographics of folks who are unemployed right now, it's definitely weighted to the older folks and the younger folks. And I don't think that I think some of that is by design, frankly.
I didn't understand what you said because you're on a lousy phone. And you didn't answer my question anyway. Listen, I want to move on. I'll kind of come back to this because I want to know what a guy in the IT sector says about the things she said because they were pretty strong. But we got a guest caller. He's been a fan of this show for all the 3 years, an especially vicious fan. After the shows, I get emails, and, man, they are brutal. You think I'm brutal? He's brutal. And he's mainly a behind-the-scenes guy, but he was the boss of Shally and Jim Stroud and Glenn Guttmacher in the glory days of sourcing at Microsoft. Rob McIntosh, are you here?
Hey, Michael, I'm here. Happy birthday.
Thank you very much. He's Australian, everybody, but he's lived in Canada, he lives in Atlanta, and he's a bigwig now. Too big for us, you think, but not really. He's called in. He's got a question for you, Paul DeBettings.
Hey, Rob.
Hey, Paul, how you doing?
Doing well. Thanks to hear your voice, brother.
So I'm going to try and get this the tone of the show out of Dr. Phil and Oprah, and we'll get to some business topics.
Thank you.
So, question for you. You're a third-party agency recruiter, right?
Correct.
Okay. And just out of curiosity, just this is from a recruiting leadership perspective, when I look at engaging agencies, I get agency calls all the time, probably a couple a week.
Yep.
On average, in the IT sector, what would be the average salary that you actually work on a position? About 100K?
Salaries in Minneapolis are going to be a little bit lower than that, so it's probably 70 to 90.
Okay, so we'll say about 75K, right?
Sure.
Out of curiosity, how often does it take you in length to fill those positions? 2 hours, 4 hours, 40 hours?
I would go with 15 to 20.
So I'll go on the high side, 15 to 20. Okay. So approximately that works out to be $3,700 an hour, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So the challenge I have as an executive in an organization, mm-hmm. and this is why I want to throw the topic on the yeah. table for Animal and the crowd to maybe discuss, is if you compare that salary with a brain surgeon in the U.S. who gets paid $240 an hour, that's basically implying that a recruiter or an agency recruiter is, you know, five times more expensive than a brain surgeon. What's the justification for me to continue to use an agency versus paying a $75 an hour contract?
Hey, who's ever doing that with their phone? Shut up! Stop it! Stop it! Oh, here's that. Oh, sure, you know what? Go ahead. Ask the question again, Story.
Paul, did you hear the last part of the question?
I'm good. I'm ready for your answer.
No, I need the answer from you.
No, I'm telling you, I don't disagree with you. 2 years ago, I stopped working with most of the large companies in town that would want to work with me because it was too much of a pain in the ass. You know, I would have my internal HR recruiter friends bitching at me about how much they hated their job, the process sucked. And then they would turn to me and ask me why I was charging so much. And I said, because of what you just got done saying, and now I have to go through even more hoops than you do. I don't think it's justified, to be honest with you. So I started working with a lot of smaller companies here locally, whether they were in IT or not, who needed IT folks. I've been doing a series of bulk placement deals for people for 2 years, and I've had a blast, and the clients are thrilled. And I think everybody gets a much better value this way.
So you've reduced your fees?
I actually am billing more now per month than I was before, so it depends on your perspective.
Not your revenue, but you've reduced your per placement fees.
Well, instead of charging 20%, we're doing, you know, if they need to hire five folks, it might be 25 or 30 grand per a deal.
Jerry.
So, yeah.
Jerry.
Five hires.
What?
Jerry. Come on.
I'm still trying to see if I agree with Rob's assessment that recruiters charge $3,700 an hour.
In that example. If
your average recruiter probably makes, you know, 15, 20 placements a year, theoretically, you know, that's, 100 hours of work to each placement.
Yeah, you're there losing. You're there getting punched in the stomach with a lot of orders that never go through. You're putting in the time, and what your time is amortized, or whatever they call it in mortgages.
And brain surgeons don't spend their whole day having people tell them to screw off, and they're useless,
right.
And they don't need you, and they've got 10 other brain surgeons that want to do this job. And You know, so it's all perspective.
But is that worth paying for, though? Does an employer need to sympathize with what recruiters go through and pay them for that?
Yeah, I got another question that Rob, you there still?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Hey, big man. Okay, look, if you hire a contractor, he or she is not going to do from inside your corporation what we're going to do from outside, right?
Where do you get that story from?
Well, talk to – you know what? They can't do telephone sourcing. They can't do all those things
that
recruiters do.
That.
No
says,
way.
Says who?
So corporate recruiters inside companies, they do all the things that third-party recruiters do, and you're not worried that maybe someone's going to get mad at you and it's going to wreck your brand or something like that, right?
Nope.
You call your competitors – your guys call your competitors and try to recruit people directly. Is that so?
Of course they do.
Okay. I never heard of it.
Most corporate recruiters do.
Okay.
Where did we get that a brain surgeon only charges $250 an hour?
So a brain surgeon in the U.S. gets paid between $300,000 to $700,000. I took the middle ground at $500,000. Divide $500,000 comes to $240 an hour.
Okay.
That's the brain surgeon out of UOP, Jerry.
But I'm wondering about actually the time spent in the surgery room, in operation, practicing their profession more than just going through paperwork and those kind of things.
Oh, sure. I mean, I could use an example if we could just take a MD, right? I'm just trying to show the correlated value of, you said 100 hours it might take on a search. That's still $750 an hour in the Paul example.
Yeah, if you get paid. If you get paid anything at all, right?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, let's move on. But, Rob, you have a follow-up? You got something else, Big Shot?
No, I don't want to derail your happy show.
Okay. Okay. Anybody got a question for Rob? Anybody got a question
week.
For Rob? Now, this guy was in charge of sourcing. He was in charge of sourcing at Microsoft, and I don't know. He was some other kind of big wig at Deloitte and Touche, and now he's doing something. Global sourcing manager for some other consulting firm. Anybody got a question for him? Paul, you first. You have a question for him?
Okay. Rob, can we turn this into a series of blog posts between us?
Huh? Just ask him a question, okay?
Well, look, I think that you're trying to get 2-second answers of what's a much longer conversation to have.
Hey, Paul, just tell Michael to shut up.
Yeah, go on someone else's show, okay? So
let's
move on. Come on, we'll move on. Okay, are you ready?
I've got a question for Rob.
Go ahead.
Rob, it sounds like you're in a position where you get plenty of marketing calls from recruiters.
Yep.
I would imagine every so often that you do use a recruiter. How do you determine that?
On which one that we use versus
Yeah. I mean, how do you go past the 60-second junk on the front end to where you're actually investing a little time with a recruiter and let them work for you?
Well, short answer is I like people that have done their homework before giving me a call, so
okay.
They know my business. They know my potential pain. They sound smart.
How do they show you that?
Well, it's what they say.
What? Look, give me an example.
Hey, Rob. I'm calling from ABC today. Reason for the call, I know you've doing some research online. I can see that some of these positions seem difficult to fill based on what I'm seeing, how long they've remained posted for. Also, speaking to a few people in the industry, this seems to be a tough space to fill in general. Thought I could talk to you about maybe helping out in this area. I know that you don't use agencies that much. Your own internal corporate function does. But wanted to see if there's an opportunity that, we could talk about this, and this, and more. That to me is an honest, simple, smart, done their homework approach. That's what I like.
Cool. Thank you.
Now, I got a question for you related. Paul, sorry, I'm sidelining you for a minute. We've got the guest. He's a special caller, and I can get you back on any time. But listen,
nice.
Rob, are you still there?
No, I'm going to hang up soon.
Okay, soon. Just one more question. This guy was highly visible online. He had a high, he was well known as the guy who was in charge of sourcing or whatever at Microsoft, and we all knew he went to Deloitte and Touche, even if he wasn't visible all the time. And yet, in his most recent move, he was recruited by a headhunter. It flabbergasted me because Microsoft owns part of the company he's working for now. There was no internal call saying, hey, how are you, old buddy? Would you like to take a look at this new venture? So I'm wondering how they approached you, first of all, and, the other thing, why did they use a recruiter? I don't know if you can answer that. But how did they make the approach?
Yeah, it was actually, funnily enough, it was an executive firm out of the UK that gave me the call and said, this is the opportunity. We know your background. We've done some research. So it was a pretty straightforward approach. Would you be interested in doing this from a career path perspective? I said yes. To answer the second part of the question, I do not know. I mean, I think fundamentally that's part of the challenge every corporate recruiting function has, right? They can't fill all the positions. In this particular case, I'd say the organization that I inherited, probably not as proactive from a recruiting corporate perspective as they are today. That might have been one of the reasons why they leaned on an agency historically. And I'll even give you some more context, Animal, on this. Traditionally, in this organization, we'd engage executive search firms to go fill CEO, CFO, CIO positions. We've just recently filled the CFO, the CIO, and soon another executive role, and we didn't use an executive search firm. I actually was involved myself and my team, and we did it ourselves.
Okay, congratulations. Okay, buzz off now. I have to give the floor back to my guest. Thank you for calling in, Rob. I appreciate your vicious support. Thank you.
Michael, I'll listen quietly in the background while I type.
Okay.
Thanks, Rob.
While he types and crunches chocolate bars, it's probably him who does it all with them chocolate bar wrappers right into the phone. Now, Paul, are you still with us?
Hey, hold on. I'm working, yeah?
Okay, yeah. Okay, listen. Is technology going to replace us? Is LinkedIn going to replace the recruiter?
I think one of the things I wanted to go back to Rob's point was I think that hiring companies are bringing search firms in way too early in the process. I think that there are a lot of search firms running around who are doing just crappy jobs of pulling people off online and representing them as some really profound candidate that they found through their networking expertise. I think we're going to lose a lot of the folks in our industry. And let me keep going for a second before you cut me off. We've lost about, on my Minnesota recruiters email list here, we've lost about 20% of the names from the search firm folks that were listed. And I think that our industry is getting hit really hard, and I think much as the corporate recruiters need to update their skills, I think we do too. So I don't think technology is going to replace us. I do think technology is taking a huge bite out of our business, and I don't know if that's a bad thing.
Well, what an altruist. Yeah, it's a bad thing. Okay.
What was that business about 30% of the company of the names are lost?
Okay.
What was that all about?
So my Minnesota recruiters group here in Minneapolis, we've got about 2,000 corporate search and consulting firm recruiters and HR folks that are on our email list. Since November of 2007, approximately 20% of the folks on that list who were in a search or consulting firm are no longer in the business. So I'm not saying the businesses are out. I'm talking about the number of recruiters are out of the business.
Yeah, Maureen likes to argue that only 20% are left. She thinks 80% have gone.
I'd say about 60% are still here, 55 to 60%. That's based on my personal database of recruiters I know, stay in touch with, and know.
You know, regardless of the numbers, I think that our industry is going, this search part of the industry is definitely going to change. And I'm sorry, but I think that some of the folks who got in our industry were here, you know, because they were trying to escape from the mortgage industry. And I would rather have a bunch of recruiters who are recruiters versus people who are wannabes. Unless I think Rob's point is true, is he's getting a bunch of crappy phone calls from folks who have no experience, and you know, it's making it harder for everybody else who actually knows what they're doing. So
right,
if we have to thin, I hate to say, I want to thin the herd a little bit because we're talking about people with mortgages and families, but you know.
Yeah, but you're a tough guy. Is telephone sourcing going to succumb to online profiles?
You know, I've been hearing this conversation with you guys for a long time, too. I think there's always going to be a place for folks like Maureen. There may not be as many of the Maureens running around, but certainly there's still – there is no – I'm doing a presentation for some corporate HR folks in the morning. They're like, what are the two tools we should use? And I said, if you only want two tools, you don't want me to speak to you because there's more than two. I mean, there's lots of different ways to find folks, and I think you have to have that tool chest. You know, you have to have a bunch of different hammers to put up a house.
Well, if you had to say two, what would they be? Just between
cool.
us.
I think that, okay, so if I were to be talking to the HR folks tomorrow, because it would be different if I was talking to search firm folks. If I was talking to HR folks tomorrow, I said you better have a killer website and killer customer service.
And if you were talking to the other?
Now, if I'm talking to search firm folks, I'm saying you better be able to use the phone, and you better be able to use an applicant tracking system of your own.
Okay, I don't understand any of that stuff. Let's move on. Yeah. You know, listen, now you go to a lot of networking events, right? Yes or
correct.
No? Do you consider yourself to be good at working a room? Yes or no?
Okay, I'll go with yes.
Yes. If you went to a business event, a business networking event, a general one, not an event for recruiters or IT people, how would you handle yourself?
If I'm going – see, that's why the answer to the last question isn't exactly yes. If I'm going into a place where I don't know anybody, I actually clam up. I'm a little bit of a wallflower, so I have to go find whoever's putting on the event, say, hey, here's who I am. This is what I do. Can you introduce me to someone here who's a friendly person that can help me introduce me to other folks? Because I'm actually quite shy in the very beginning.
Okay.
Once
and
you
if
warm
they,
up, it's easy.
Yeah, if they give you to somebody and you're not, after 5 minutes of conversation, you've had enough of that person, how do you get rid of them?
If it was good enough, I'd be like, hey, I'm new here. Who would you suggest? Who can you point out that I should go talk to? I'll just ask.
Okay. Okay, anybody else got a question for him at this point?
I do. You mentioned recruiters who are not doing the job, finding people on LinkedIn who are easy to find. Is a eminently qualified candidate not as good because they've got a visible presence on LinkedIn and they are easy to find? I don't understand the correlation between the two.
My contention is that we should be finding, I believe, that I should be finding candidates for my clients that they're not finding already on their own. And in most cases, most of my clients are already all over these tools anyway. And I believe it's my job to find the other folks for them.
Hooray, I second that.
Now, are your clients, though, able to find everybody if they're not connected or in their network on LinkedIn?
No, but I have this idea, Jerry, to go along the idea of fishing. I'm going to go where no one else is fishing versus trying to fish right next to my client.
And what if there's no fish there?
Well, but they might be sitting where there's no fish too, right? There are clients.
So it's not quality of client, it's visibility of client, correct?
I'm a walleye man.
Just let him finish, Janice.
What I'm trying to get to is this. It's just my perspective that companies bring in search firms too quick. Either bring me in first or bring me in after nothing has worked. The idea of bringing me in while you're still talking – while you're still doing your candidate database and you're still posting ads and you're using other search firms, I don't even want that business. It's too much of a pain in the butt. So when
you're
they finally say,
hello.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to keep banging my head against a brick wall. I've done it for 12 years and it hurts like hell.
Yeah, want to give us an example of a search where you succeeded, where your client failed. And just before you go ahead, thanks, Maureen, for not monitoring Twitter again. I mean, I'm getting all kinds of messages here from Kimberly Roden. Finally, oh no, it's from Resume Strategy, RT'd by Kimberly Roden, double whammy.
They're not questions, they're comments.
Yeah. She says, finally, intelligent analysis. Well done, MN Headhunter. Credibility now beyond head of Lonely Hearts Club. I don't know what that means. Okay, Maureen, you're off the hook there. That's just nonsense anyway. Okay, answer the question. Go ahead. Tell us a story about when
so
you
relieved.
Filled someone. Go ahead. Tell us a story.
Shut up, so I can't.
Go ahead.
So last year, a local website.
I love the Minnesota Headhunter. I love the Minnesota Headhunter. Go ahead.
Shut up so I can answer the question.
Yeah, okay, go ahead.
So they needed to bring their it's a web shop in town. They needed to go from 25 to 30 folks. Almost all of these are IT people. The owner called me up and said, hey, I'm trying to increase my staff. I'm wondering what your fees are. I'm guessing I can't afford them, but let's talk about it. I'm like, okay, fine. I knew who he was. He's like, I need to hire 5 PHP open source developers, and I'm probably going to be able to do one of these on my own through a referral, but I still need to hire 4. I can probably pay you for one. He goes, but that doesn't really help my business issue. And I said, fine. So we talked about it. I learned that the owner is literally like the head of IT, finance, HR. And I'm like, so you're the only guy that I talked to? And he goes, yeah. And I said, well, let's do all 4 for 20 grand. And he's like, well, why the hell would you do that? And I said, well, it's a bit of a slow economy. If you're telling me over the next 4 to 5 weeks I can place 4 people at your place and bill 20 grand, I'm going to say yes because it was easy. So to go back to what Rob was saying earlier, I didn't have to go through vendor selection process. I didn't have to go through you know, send in a bunch of forms. I went and met the guy at his office. We literally signed an agreement on a piece of paper in about 7.5 minutes. So I think that if companies also didn't make this process so hard on us, we might not charge them so much for our service. I mean, I don't think Kevin Garnett's worth $90 million for a career, but that's what the market's going for. So in some cases, you're going to hit him hard for a placement, but if this guy had easy to find people, had an issue, and he couldn't do it on his own, so I stepped in.
Okay, yeah, he's a one-man shop. Don't tell me he can spend all his day looking at LinkedIn and whatever other resume banks are on board. That takes a lot of time, right?
He told me, he said, he goes, I don't care where you go to find these folks as long as they're good folks. He said, so if you go to Monster, you go to LinkedIn, you go to your database of age 2 years, I don't care. I need four talented people.
Minnesota, you were telling us a few minutes ago that your clients are all over these things. You just contradicted yourself right now, right?
Yeah, you got him, Animal. You nailed
no, you
him.
Didn't.
Nailed him.
No. Jerry? Jerry? So you said give you an example. So not
give
every
us,
company
I, you know
is,
what? That was a great story. I liked it. I gotta murder people to get a story out of them. That was a good story. How about telling us one that you set us up for? How about telling us one that you set us up for with your clients are actually going out and doing all the stuff you say they can do, and then they bring you in at the right time to solve the problem?
And then you
I
tell
want
them
to hear
no.
That.
Then you tell them no.
Oh, no, that's not the case. So there's, and I'm not going to give you the name of the company. So a really big retailer here in town was having a hard time finding a director of IT.
Best Buy.
And they had looked at ads, been through their candidate database, had already used a couple search firms, but they needed something really specific. So they called me up and they said, hey, are you willing to do the search? I said, are you done looking? And they said, essentially, yes. And then I said, are you actually done looking? And they said, yes. I said, well, I am going to charge you 25% to do this because if you spent the last 10 weeks and you've had how many people working on it, I'm going to want to be compensated for this thing. And it took a long time. So they had already used – literally a lot of folks knew about this job, but the people that didn't know about it were the ones that needed to be talked to. So I called the other folks in town who were in financial services who had a retail background that nobody knew about.
How did you source those people?
Part of it is being in this community for 12 years. You start to learn who people are. Two is I'm not shy to call up a CIO of a really large company, email them, and say, hey, here's who I am. Here's what I do. I'm looking for a director of IT. Do you happen to know any folks who fit this specific skill set? Because it's kind of a niche thing. And they're more than willing to pass on names and referrals of their friends and people that they used to
Why?
Work with.
Why? Why?
Well, I think, again, it's about your approach. If you're calling up saying, I'm trying to help a company and I'm trying to find a really good person, do you happen to know anyone? Most folks are going to be willing to say yes. I mean, you have to understand that if I can point them to my blog, if I can point them to where I am online, they can learn something about me. I mean, this is why I'm looking forward to doing my presentation for the Social Recruiting Summit. I actually want to show folks, here's how you can actually do this, and it makes some sense. You know, people can go and figure out why I'm a recruiter by reading my blog. So I'm not just one of those guys from the mortgage industry who was looking for an escape.
I don't know anything about the mortgage industry, but are they as evil as you make them out to be? They can have a blog, too.
They may not be as evil as I'm making them out to be, but I would suggest that they're probably a pretty unskilled recruiter.
Kind of reminds me of recruiters who now write resumes and coach. We've got the same problem as job
search. I want to go on with this referral thing, but I want to ask if anybody who doesn't usually talk, I mean the shy people, if they want to come forward and ask a question of the great Paul, the unmentionable last name or unpronounceable. Go on. Does anybody want to say hello
we
to
have
Paul?
We have a question coming in from Twitter from Preferred Vendor.
Go ahead.
Could you ask him if he's familiar with The Gold by Eli Goldratt? This sounds like classic a theory of constraints approach.
Oh, that's too highbrow for this show, okay?
Yeah, I'm not going to lie.
Let's go on to Blake Cannon.
No,
Blake
let's
Cannon's
wait a
asking.
Second. Well, Blake Cannon's here. He can ask the question if he wants to. Do you want to ask a question?
Sure.
Go ahead.
I was wondering if... Yeah, I've often thought
hey,
about...
Hey, get off the speakerphone. Are you on a speakerphone?
Calm down, Blake.
Good Lord.
Gee whiz.
How's that? Is that better?
Yeah, it's better.
Oh, yeah. Watch.
So, I mean, listening to what he was saying, I'm wondering why he is so quick to devalue his service by
He explained why. He explained
no,
why.
He
can make a quick hit, 20K in a week for an easy four guys, right?
No, he doesn't do that. He doesn't do a quick hit. He waits till they haven't been able to find him.
No, that's when he charges them 25%. That's when he charges 25%.
How about I explain it? Is that okay?
Go ahead.
So there are two separate models. There is the small companies in town who need help. There are the big companies in town who need help who can pay. So if a web shop of 20, in order for a web shop of 25 people, they're never going to be able to pay the fees that we would normally charge. When they get to 50 or 100, then we can have this conversation. But if it's a position that didn't work and they couldn't fill it, they're going to get dinged for 25%. I don't devalue that at all.
Do you understand that, Blake? If they've got their own internal recruiters or whatever, and they've worked it, and it's going to be hard for him, there's no low-hanging fruit, then he charges a substantial fee. If it's some one-man, you know, owner-run small company where the guy doesn't have time to do anything, he knows that this guy hasn't, you know, looked in the easiest places to find people, and he's willing to, you know, just pick some low-hanging fruit and get a decent, you know, $20,000 a week salary for it. That's what
it wasn't $20,000 a week. It was $20,000 over 6 weeks. So let's be clear about that. But anyway,
I thought you said 1 week. Okay, 6 weeks. If you search for 6 weeks for that money, is that what you said?
No. It's from beginning to end. I didn't search for 6 weeks, and then we went into it. I was finding people. He was interviewing. He was hiring, and I'm finding folks. And he's interviewing. I mean, it was.
So how many hours do you think you put in for that $20,000?
God, I don't even really know.
You don't know. Okay, fine.
You know, I don't like that whole how many hours thing.
I don't
anyway,
either.
Because we're tapping into a career of
right.
research, knowledge, expertise. I mean, if you ask a brain surgeon, how many hours did you put into that surgery?
Yeah.
A lifetime.
He's right.
I mean, the one guy.
I'm tired of that. So knock it off.
I don't think you guys are. I think you're missing the point.
Is that Rob again? Come on.
Yeah. The point is drawing the parallel between what the value of what you guys provide. And you know, I'm not a corporate recruiter all my life. I was third-party recruiter for many years before I became a corporate recruiter and then a corporate leader. The perceived value is, as a corporate leader, I can go out and engage a contractor at $75 an hour or $156K a year, that would work out to be, and I could have them fill 24 positions, which would work out based on the salary analogy we did here, it would work out to about $6,500 or higher. Why would mm-hmm. I go and engage an agency for those 24 positions when it's costing me $20,000 or higher and the amount of time, energy, and effort put in? It's just simple math.
Well, Rob, you probably wouldn't, and it sounds like your approach is the way to go, but a lot of my clients, they're not going to hire 24 people this year. And
the guest wants to ask a question to Rob. Hey, Rob?
Yeah.
So I get what you're saying. I would expect, though, that you're not probably offering up, you're not offering up all 20 of these spots. My point to the last example I used was they had already used their internal recruiters. They actually had two contractors on staff, and it didn't work. So my question to you is, if they had been looking for months and didn't find the right person, what is the value of that person by that point in time that I make the placement?
Well, that now becomes a question around lost opportunity costs, right? How much money could the business be leaving on the table because the role's not being filled, particularly the revenue?
There you go.
But that does not change the point that how much time, energy, and effort you need to put into it still has to be seen as value. Look, the perfect scenario, the way I think third-party agencies should work in this day and age with all companies, is have a more strategic discussion at the beginning of the year saying, okay, what parts of your business are you going to struggle with potentially? I know you've got an internal corporate recruiting function. Let's talk about the roles that I could partner with to do, and I get them at the beginning of the process, not after you tell me that, oh, an internal got it in the last moment. I used to tear my hair out when a hiring manager or a client used to say that. That's what I'd propose is a smarter way that we operate as a joint relationship going forward, and that's the way I try and operate.
Now, you know
I
what?
Think you're correct.
Let me just make one point. Julia Stone, whom I like, even though she writes bad things about me, okay? She said on my show that she'll never be one to go to the client and say, "Give me your hardest search." She said she's not that desperate for business. Why should she struggle? That's her theory.
Is anybody else eating?
I don't know that I disagree with what Julia's saying because that's her perspective, but.
Is that Rayanne who having lunch back there? Rayanne, is that you?
Okay.
But you know what? There's ego in that animal. You got to separate business, transaction, expertise, value, and ego. And I hear ego in that.
Okay.
You know, I'm just
pull
not
up,
that. I'm not that highbrow with. I agree with what your answer just was, but that's just not me. Look, if a company's been looking for something for weeks or months and they can't fill it, and they're willing to pay me a chunk of cash, whatever the chunk is, and depending on where my business is, depending on how busy I am or not, and it could just be that, you know, again, if you've been
– we've been over this. Let me ask you a question. What percentage of your searches can't you fill? What percentage of your searches don't get filled? The searches you take on, maybe you don't want to say, I don't want to expose you. What percentage are unsuccessful?
I'd say a third.
A third.
I'm guessing it's a third.
Anybody else got the guts to say?
Probably half.
Okay. Anybody else? No. Okay,
what
thanks.
Are the reasons that go into not being able to fill?
Yeah, that's a good question, Maureen. Thank you.
The client.
I think sometimes it's client expectations. I think that sometimes that – I mean, there is a company – I have a failure that just happened. I mean, there's a company here in town who's actually literally, I kid you not, interviewed 72 candidates for a particular role in their company. I wish I would have known that before I got involved because I would never have touched that one. There's a whole other set of issues there besides the candidates that are being presented. It's the company or it's the manager or it's their process or it's something.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes it's
okay, I got another question for you. I have a related question, but what about relocation? How often is that an issue in a lack of ability to fill a job? People don't want to relocate.
I think it's right now that they just can't sell their houses to be able to relocate themselves, and most companies are unwilling to buy their house to have it sitting on their books. So I've seen very little relocation being done in Minneapolis in the last 2 years.
Okay, but what about in good times? Is relocation an issue? I find it is an issue.
Again, Minneapolis is a little bit different, right? We actually import people in, not export people out. So the market here is a little bit different than it is in some cities. And just like my business.
Okay, now you made me a perfect lead in to my friend, Greg Dergarian's got a question for you.
Hey, Animal. Greg Dergarian. I got a question for your guest, that incredible IT search consultant here in the Twin Cities, Paul Dipingis. And my question is, when it comes to developers,
Turn it down and play it again. Sorry, it's awful loud.
You know what the question is. I can answer it for you.
Hey, Animal. Greg Dergarian. I got a question for your guest, that incredible IT search consultant here in the Twin Cities, Paul Dipingis. And my question is, when it comes to developers, how do you keep them down on the farm after they've seen Powery? And what I mean is, all week long, I've been listening to this ERE Expo stream, and they're talking about culture, eat strategy for breakfast, and you know, if I hear that kind of thing one more time, I think I'm going to puke, because when it comes to software development, I mean, what the really good guys want to do is they want to work on the new technologies. But if the work that needs to be done is old legacy stuff, like connecting an ERP system with a general ledger system, and, you know, when they're done, all they have is legacy skills, I mean, that's not fun anymore. So how do you keep them happy? Thanks.
Yeah. Greg is turning into a prima donna. It was 20 seconds last week. It's a minute this week, okay? Now, but essentially what he's saying is that he's saying in Minneapolis it's the boonies and they don't have any advanced challenging work.
No,
now you're saying you're bringing guys in.
Respectfully, you inferred wrong, because he and I got together the other day and I already know what he's actually trying to say, which is this. What do you do when you have a talented staff and what you're working on is no longer fun or exciting, and how do you keep them engaged before they decide to go to the other cool tech company in town? That's actually what his question is.
Uh-huh.
And one of the
How's
issues
a recruiter
again,
supposed to know that?
I was gonna say, is that your problem?
Well, hold on. Let's stick with Greg's question first. So Greg's thinking about with his business. He's got some really talented dudes and ladies, and he's trying to figure out how to keep them engaged versus ongoing maintenance with their code. And so I think he's asking that culture question about, so what makes temp work different or special? Why would someone want to stick around versus then going to another cool tech company? And, somebody's done listening to us. So I think what I'm trying to get to is
they're dropping like flies. They're dropping like flies, so keep it interesting, okay?
I want to hear this, though.
But, okay, can I finish now, please?
Yeah, go ahead.
It's not just about companies recruiting people. They're not retaining people.
That's all. Food and beads and all sorts of stuff.
Huh? Go ahead. That's some nut. Go ahead. Go ahead, please. You're wrecking my show, whoever that is, okay? So, Paul, that's getting boring, okay? So let's just – he wants to know – now, I see the recruiter's thing is, how to attract people. Sometimes they'll give you a good order. You say, I'm willing to pay someone, but if they're working on boring work, how do you attract them? I find my clients.
I don't.
You don't.
If a company says to me, Paul, we need to hire a certain kind of a developer to maintain code in this legacy system that's 3 years old.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that I have enough business that I can say no to that because I don't want to do that spot. That's going to be boring as crap. The candidate's going to know it. That's not something I want to get into.
Okay, so you turn down work that you don't think is going to attract any candidates. Is that right?
Even in a crappy economy, I have turned business down.
Okay, listen, let me ask you a question. I'm having a problem. I'm looking for an AV sales rep, experienced person, here in Toronto. And I've talked to a lot of people, and the package that these guys are offering does not seem to be high enough to attract an experienced person. I've gone back and told my client a few times, but I've already put a lot of time into it, so I don't want to just turn away. Am I throwing good money after bad? Should I just do what you just say, you know, this isn't working. Now I know the market. He's not reasonable. Should I just walk away like you just said you do?
Bail.
If they're not going to budge, they're not going to make any changes, I would go find some new business.
If I've talked to 30 people, let's just say 30, it might have been more, and I only was able to attract one junior person, and the guy wasn't interested because he was too junior, even though I thought it was a good candidate, does that mean all the work I did, I should just turn my back on it? And the first other question is, after I had no familiarity with this market, if I've talked to 30 people, do I know the market well enough to make that call and tell my client you're too cheap?
Okay, so two separate questions. The one is, do I think that at some point in time, you're asking the question, do I need to bat 100% every time? And of course the answer is no. I mean, you're not going to fill every spot. If you don't know the market in which the skill set in which you're in, then maybe I would stick around for a little while longer and see if that's the case or if it really is the company itself.
How many people do you have to talk to before you know the market?
I wouldn't have a clue.
No?
I don't know what the number is.
No,
how would you have an answer to that question?
No, you know, I think some people would say if you learn 100 words, you break a language. And if you speak to 50 people, you understand the marketplace, okay? But you don't want to be that bold. Okay, I understand. Does anybody else?
Hold on. If you're saying Well, it's the only way I can get to settle this down here for a second. If you're saying, okay, Paul, you need to find us some Java developers in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
I might only need to talk to 15 or 20 folks. If
uh-huh.
you're asking me to find someone who's a .NET with Silverlight experience, I might need to talk to 125 folks.
Uh-huh.
If I do that search in Austin, Texas, or San Francisco, those numbers are going to be different again. So you're looking for a universal number, and I think that recruiting
okay.
is local.
Okay, here's the question. I don't want to drag it up, but let's say you went to a different environment then. You started working in Austin. How many people would you have to talk to before you knew what the market was like, and you could go back to your client and say you're not offering enough money and feel confident that you're right, and he didn't come up with somebody himself next week and make a fool out of you?
No, no. You have to. Who's giving you the information? Am I going to go call 30 people in Austin who actually know the market, or am I introducing myself?
Yeah, they're targets. They're targets. They're the exact same people you want to recruit.
Okay, so I'm actually recruiting 30 people. I already have a set of names that Maureen's been able to phone source for me.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, we only have to talk to 6 or 7 to figure out what the market is.
6 or 7?
Maybe 10 top.
Okay, good. Got an answer out of him. Okay, we're almost out of time. Does somebody who doesn't ask a lot of questions want to ask Paul a question? I have lots of questions left, you know, but I got to give way to Jerry soon. Anybody got a question for Paul?
Shouldn't you find out?
Someone who doesn't ask questions, Janice.
Good.
You know, I can just imagine what you were like in grade 3 or grade 4.
Yes,
you know, teacher, no, put your hand down, Janice. Put your hand down. Okay, anybody else? Anybody
hey,
else?
I got one.
Who are you?
It's Brett from St. Louis.
Okay, go ahead.
Java STL, you know me.
Yeah, yeah. Give your whole name.
What did I ask you, Paul? What's that?
Give your whole name.
Brett Hogemeyer.
Let's go.
Okay.
Let's go.
Paul, I wanted to ask you, what if you've got the small, medium-sized business that just doesn't have the staff to go find their own people, or the big business that can't fill the search that they've been looking for forever, which would you rather take? Would you rather take the niche spot or the land grab for the small company?
I'd rather work with the small and mid-sized companies because it's more fun. You can see the impact of what you're doing with the business. And it's also much more relationship-based versus putting a guy at a big company that you're never going to see or hear from again, and an HR manager or a, you know, an IT manager who just doesn't really give a crap because it's just a body to them. I'd rather have the relationship stuff.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Brad Hogan Miller, got another question? You were a guest 2 years ago. He's a pop of the past.
Yeah, it's been a while. It's been a while.
Ask another question. This is your field. He works in IT. He's a master.
Yeah.
Ask him a question.
What, you said the rates are pretty suppressed up there?
Yeah, I definitely see that we've seen, you know, fees here usually have been between 20 and 25. I'm seeing 15 and 20. I also think a much broader macro issue is that the salaries themselves are not what they were. To give you a quick example, because I know we're out of time, but Best Buy, when they did the voluntary layoff and then their involuntary or their voluntary buyout, the involuntary layoff, they were cutting people with salaries over six figures. Those jobs are now in the 80 to 110 range. So I also see that even if you are charging 25%, your fees for those same exact spots of 3 years ago will just be less now in dollars.
Yeah.
Let me ask you both a question since you're both in IT. What percentage of your jobs are going overseas to India and China, the jobs you recruit for?
Go ahead,
more. Couldn't give you a percentage, but it's more.
They're already gone.
I think that
the menial ones. There's a difference, though. The menial one, in my experience, the menial ones are going overseas. The ones that take creativity and good integration with the rest of the team, those are sticking around.
What percentage of the jobs are those?
That it'd be hard to give you a number, honestly.
Go ahead, Paul.
I'd agree. There's no way to know what the number or the percentage is. But the heck was that?
I don't know. This is driving me crazy.
But I'm just going to keep going anyway. I think that the rest of the answer is. Okay, are we all right now?
I don't know.
Oh, my.
Anyway, I think what I'm trying to say is if you're an IT guy and you don't have business skills, you're screwed.
You don't have what?
Business skills.
Yeah, no business skills. There's an echo on the line. It's an echo. That's us, I hear. I don't know if it's somebody's doing it to us. There's a saboteur on this show. I'm positive.
I think it's somebody's computer speakers and then their phone.
You know, Paul, I'm going to thank you. We're going to go to Jerry's after show right now. Thank you for the third anniversary show, Paul DeBetti. Goodbye.
What was that? That's not my theme song, dude.
You got it now. It's a nicer song.
No.
Okay.
That
hold
threw
on.
Me way off, man. What was
that? Well, hold on. I'll play yours. Wait a sec.
Happy birthday, animal.
Thank you very much.
There you go. Now we're in the groove. Okay. What was that song, that first one? Was that Bono?
Yeah, Beautiful Day.
Huh.
Mike Raymer's favorite song.
Okay, cut that person off.
I don't think it's a person. I think there's a problem with the line. I'll try muting some people. Don't hang up. I'm just muting you.
Who
is it better?
Who all is still with us here?
Tons of people.
Yeah, I need names, people.
Jeremy.
Paul. I'm here.
Hold on, Jeremy.
Maureen.
Maureen.
Janice.
Paul.
Janice, Paul.
Shannon.
Hey, Shannon, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
Living the dream.
Good.
Shannon, you couldn't ask Paul a question?
I didn't have anything. I wasn't learning anything. I just didn't have anything that seemed like could get a good answer. I'm sure he's a great recruiter. There wasn't anything.
He just wasn't interesting. Okay, great.
Yeah,
it's pretty
frank. It's my show.
Sorry, I'm off. I'll go. Bye.
Okay, who else we have?
Rob's still hanging around.
Who is?
Rob.
Hey, Rob. Thanks for sticking with us. Who else?
Blake.
Hey, Blake. Awesome.
I would tell Michael, but this is the best part of the show.
Poor Michael.
Who else? Folks, people, Rayanne, are you here? Rayanne wasn't here today, was she?
I think she was on earlier.
Was she?
I thought I heard her early, yeah.
Who else is still with us? Is it just us seven people?
I guess. It's unlike Rayanne not to show.
Did I scare Rayanne?
Did you hang up?
No, did I scare Rayanne?
Oh, she's probably at ERE. She's at ERE, isn't she?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, Brad, are you still here? The guy from St. Louis? Huh. Okay. Well, cool. Cool. That was a pretty good show.
I thought it was.
Yeah, that was a pretty good show.
It's kind of noisy, ratchety.
I just want to point out for the record that it actually wasn't my phone causing the issue.
I think the static's Michael's phone.
Duly noted.
I do too.
Duly noted.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you can tell when he talks.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he's calling on a landline.
It doesn't matter.
I've got kind of something that I've been thinking about here after it was mentioned earlier, maybe somebody tweeted about it, is, you know, what is our client paying us for?
Yep.
And it seemed that there was like this theme of they're paying us to do something that they can't do. And the more I've thought about that, you know, I wonder, isn't it really they're not paying us to do something that they couldn't eventually do on their own, but it's, and a good example is one of my clients that I'm with, it's they don't have the time to do it.
Exactly.
I think that's really true. I've got a client that is just overwhelmed, you know, with just a variety of positions, and she in particular, she is a hell of a recruiter. I mean, she's probably filled 1,000 positions in her life. And so it's not that she doesn't have the ability to get on LinkedIn or, you know, do a Boolean search or track people down. She simply just does not have the time.
I think you're selling the profession short.
You're actually not including most corporate recruiters don't have the expertise.
Okay. You mean the expertise in the whole maintaining a database of candidates or just all that we do? They don't have that skill, Rob? Or
the proactive part of recruiting, which means picking up the phone, networking, cold calling, headhunting. A lot of corporate recruiters don't have that expertise. They have a fear of the phone.
Well, that's the reason.
I see more and more companies, though, hiring people from our background, from a sourcing, social media. You know, one of my clients, I mean, his title is Manager of Talent Acquisition. And, you know, they're a $2 billion corporation. And you would think that person would understand recruiting and, you know, the whole sourcing, cold calling approach, I would think. But maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, there are more and more third-party recruiters being hired as corporate recruiters.
And that's the challenge. I think that's the challenge. But I think to say that, back to the LinkedIn, the person who's visible on LinkedIn, boy, that doesn't mean you can get them. That doesn't mean you can get into him and talk to him and get some cooperation from him as to be willing to maybe interview. I mean, that takes a special person. A picture on LinkedIn does not a placement make.
Mm-hmm. You know, and
you
also
have to be able to engage people. That's what you're saying.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, I mean, along with they don't have the time to do it, I wonder, a lot of it has more to do with what are you doing once you have the name of the person on your desk. And I think that there's a lot of short-sighted thinking in the sourcing world of, well, if you can identify these people or if you can locate their resume on Google or LinkedIn, then, you know, then that's the work. I've always been of the opinion that that's when the work starts. You know, that's what we're paid for.
Are you trying to pick a fight, Jerry?
No.
No, he's right, though.
See, I think, Jerry,
what's the name is on
this
your
is
desk,
the,
old, the
this is the old chicken and the egg argument. What comes first? What's more important? I've always maintained that no one part of that is important.
The most important part is what you do with the name.
Maureen?
Yes.
I found the discussion on that Sources Unleashed group very intriguing what was posted on a corporate website around the what it was telling that their expectations were of agency recruiters, and that's back to the fundamental of this whole discussion, right, which is...
Oh, yeah. If we can find it on LinkedIn or anywhere else, we're not going to pay you a fee. If you submit somebody to us that we can find on our own, you know, again, the chicken and the egg. Why did you find that intriguing?
Because I think that if I look at it from both sides of the house, that both people are right. Why would I want to engage an agency with a role that I can fill myself? Why would an agency want to pick up the phone and sell me on their services on a role that I can fill myself? That adds no value in the relationship.
Right.
Hey, is it my phone that's causing this problem?
I think so, man.
All right, let me...
Sorry.
Well, don't be polite. Tell me hang up and I'll call back in.
You want to try to call back in?
Yeah, I'll call back in.
I don't know if you can.
I'll try if I can't, then.
Are you on it? Are you on a voiceover IP?
No, landline.
Wow.
So where
be the
hey, it's gone
cable.
Where are you located, Rob? On the
Australia.
Planet?
Australia.
I'm in Atlanta.
You're in Atlanta.
You're in Atlanta.
Yeah, I moved from Seattle to Atlanta. Let me call back in. I'll try.
Okay.
Jerry.
I thought he was from Australia.
Yeah, he's from
Australia.
Well, it sounds like maybe that was part of it.
Yeah.
Is somebody driving down the road and has their window open?
Yeah, somebody's outside.
Who's outside? Announce yourself.
Jeremy, where are you?
I'm inside.
On a speakerphone.
Yeah, but
come
I can't.
Come on, man.
Not me, I promise.
You know what it might be? Might it be Blog Talk Radio? Because I'm hearing feedback, you know, repetition from everybody.
I'm coming back. It's Blog Talk Radio. I mean, it's just screwed. You guys want to work through it? Fine, but it's not going to get any better.
We're working through it.
Okay.
We do need to get an official score. Jeremy.
Yo.
Score for the guest and the host.
I give it an 8 and 8.
Maureen.
I'd give the 8 and the 8. Yeah, I'm going to come down on the animal today. He came unglued. He sounded like he was coming unglued.
Janice?
No, I'd give it an 8 and a 9. I thought he was in good form.
Is Paul still with us?
Still here.
Sorry, Paul. We can't let you give yourself a score. Sorry. Shannon? Now, who is doing that? You know you're doing it.
That's normally Levy. Levy, are you around?
Somebody knows we're doing it. It's just not cool. So, Shannon's not with us anymore. Did Rob call back in? Maybe he couldn't get back in. Hey, Blake.
Get in.
Lay a score on us here.
I got a Paul for an 8 and Animal for a 7.
Okay. I'm gonna give Paul a 9 because he was well put together. He wasn't rattled at all. I liked it.
Yeah, that's true.
Animal. About I have to say 7. It just wasn't his best thing. I don't know why. I just wasn't feeling it today. I think he felt a lot of pressure because it was his big third anniversary, and maybe he was overthinking himself a little bit. That's just my assessment of it. But somebody knows that they've got a bad phone going on here. It's not Blog Talk Radio. Somebody's got us on speakerphone, and they're out walking the dog or getting some coffee or something.
Yeah, that's a car. I can hear that.
Somebody's sitting out on a park bench? Come on, whoever it is, tell us. We want to know.
Oh, I thought your answers were good.
Who's outside? This is my last time I'm asking. Because this is horrendous. Well, okay, guys, it looks like the after show is over. So this is crap.
Hey, it's Paul.
start muting people again.
Yeah, that's Animal role, and he's making a salad.
I want to suggest something for the show, though, if you don't mind.
You want to what?
Recommend something.
Sure.
I think sometimes we ask questions, like with Rob. I mean, Rob is going to assume that every company is as good as his, or that every company has the skill set that his recruiters have.
Okay.
And, wow, it got really clear again, didn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And I think the danger in that is that we're going to assume that just because Rob's folks are good, that every corporate recruiting function in every company is good, and it's just not the case. So when you were asking earlier about your question about am I trying to get the business that their people can't do, and, of course, the other part is sometimes they can't get to it. I mean, that is two different questions, though.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, and so we're stereotyping, folks. If I look, if I were to compare Best Buy and Target, two big retail companies here in Minneapolis, it's night and day between the way they do different things.
Well, maybe that would be a good question then to ask a new client is, are you using me because you feel that you can't fill this on your own, or is it because you don't have the time to do that?
And the reason why I bring it, because I ask that question all the time. When Animal was asking about how much more time should he spend on this search, see, I'm really sensitive to the one-man band thing. And so at some point in time, I don't want to let go of 2.5 weeks worth of work. But at some point in time, I don't want to invest 2.5 more weeks of work and then go, holy crap, now it's 5 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to bat a – I'm not going to bat 1,000. I know I'm not going to bat 1,000. And so
it's like gambling, isn't it? It's like gambling.
And I can't gamble with my time. I have to have some certainty that given the proper set of conditions that I can make a placement and get paid for it. That's what I'm looking for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm with you on that. But there's – I mean, I'm reminded, unfortunately, from time to time that there are no guarantees in this.
Well, surely.
That is why we get paid, $3,000 an hour or what have you.
I
wish I was paid $3,000 an hour.
See, I can't.
But, these qualifying questions that we're struggling with, it's really an important subject to be able to qualify.
What do you mean struggling with it?
Well, we're going back and forth with it. You know, do we say this to the client? Do we say that? Do we say this? Do we say that?
Should you get paid a lot of money because you have to put up with a lot of no's? I'm missing a continuum here. I believe recruiters are extremely valuable and worth every penny of it, but it's because of the skills they have to be able to find the candidates and be able to get the cooperation of the candidate to be willing to talk to a new employer and all the fear and everything. That's why they're worth it, not because they suffer through the no's. That to me doesn't justify collecting any money at all.
It's actually kind of professional brain surgery.
Yeah,
absolutely,
you're right.
True.
That's a good point. That's a very interesting point.
If you would hear what I've been going through with this particular candidate for the last week and a half, the guy's an international guy, so there's already a foundation of not quite understanding each other. And the nuances that I'm trying to hear, but I can't because he's using words that aren't typically a phrase meant to suggest a certain feeling or attitude towards, say, the client's response to a question. It's heavy-duty stuff. I mean, it's not just, it's gone well beyond just getting the name. Sorry, Maureen.
Mm-hmm. But this is
– But there's
–
I mean, there's – Yeah, there's so much beyond, and I don't know how many hours I've put into this, but, again, it doesn't. I don't look at the hours per each placement. This goes way back to what my first manager told me, 20-some years ago. Clients will suggest that, hey, you should lower your fee because. Maybe this is an easy placement, or you know, for a variety of reasons, maybe midstream during your placement with a client, they're going to say, hey, we just decided that we need to lower your fee, and that something's better than nothing. And from then until now, I am always reminded that my last client paid for my ability to deliver this candidate to you. The fee that you'll be paying me actually sustains me through my next search. So it's not about how many hours did I put into this particular product. It's about a series of sustaining clients and events that helps me maintain myself in this lifestyle and my ability to produce results. It's not about, wow, you called me, I stuck this job on Craigslist, and this guy just happens to live there, and he's friends with everybody, and well, yeah, he's coming over, he's on his way over to get the job. No placement is.
I think Animal's on.
Yeah, I don't know. He must be looking some comedy channel or something. Who's laughing? Who's in a tickle fight with that senator from Massachusetts right now? New Jersey. Massa?
Oh. Hey, Jerry, I think that's one of the things when I was trying to describe those four placements I did to make the 20 grand.
Yeah.
I mean, the one guy, it was a 7-minute phone call because I knew who he was. I knew he was coming up a contract and looking for a perm gig. So that was a pretty good hourly rate for those 7 minutes, right? And then one of the guys I worked on for 3.5 weeks. Now, how many hours does that go into? I don't know. See, I knew who all these people were, so I didn't actually have to source them from scratch. So I think when we ask how many hours does it take, I don't know, but the one guy I've known for 6.5 years. So
exactly.
So that's why I struggled with some of those questions, because I think it's the questions themselves might be a little bit flawed. It's how many hours does it take to do something depends on each position, the location, and the skill set. I don't know. That gets frustrating.
Like, you know, another good example is I got an email yesterday from an MIS manager in Cincinnati. And he said, you don't know me, but one of the guys that works here, you placed him like 7 years ago. His name's Jeff. He said, you placed Jeff 7 years ago. And this was at a different company altogether. Well, he said, I'm going to be leaving. And Jeff suggested that I get in touch with you because they've asked me to find a recruiter that can help replace me. Well, so if you look at, I mean, he sent me an email. So where's my work so far? Is it in my connection with that guy, or is it way back when I helped Jeff relocate his family from, I think it was like Altoona, Pennsylvania, to Cincinnati? And, I mean, that was a huge project. I mean, that... I, you know, it's hard to say how much time is this placement going to take me, because where did I start? I started with the work I did a long time ago. It's just a continuum, really. Don't mean to get too heavy with you, but, I mean, that's why we don't charge like an hourly. This took 6 hours and, you know, your bills.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I find the customers, clients, whatever you want to call them, the ones that nitpick your fee to be far less worth working with than the ones who don't.
Yeah, they don't want to pay any fee, Maureen.
Yeah. Exactly, if they could.
Well,
but there are people out there who willingly pay your fee, are happy to pay your fee, and they're real pleasures to work with.
And you work hard for them, don't you?
And you work your ass off for them, that's right.
Yep.
You do. It's a good, very good point, Janice.
I can't tell you that on a handful of times I've agreed to less than my standard minimum fee.
I just opened up 212, and I'm going to open up 614 for you and 678. I'm opening up some lines. Just letting you know, Jerry.
Oh, okay.
614.
Thanks, Animal. 614.
614 is me.
Well, that's Columbus.
Hey, Rob's back.
Hey, how's it going?
Me.
That wasn't my phone, was it?
We're not sure what it was. It was
a lot better now.
Something weird happened. What area code is your phone then, Rob?
678.
Oh, okay.
Hello.
Who's this?
Who's that?
This is Jeremy. This is the 614.
You call back in.
No.
Then who's the 212 then? Is that Levy?
No.
Hey, 212 is Nick Livingston in New York.
Nick Livingston.
I presume.
There's a stranger. Hi, Nick.
Hey,
oh, I'm a big
yourself.
Listener. I just never call in. I usually just stream online. How you doing?
Cool.
We're doing great. Yeah.
What you doing there, Nick?
What's that?
So what you doing?
Oh, I've been enjoying the free live streaming of VRE this week.
Well, there you go.
Did you hear the show before?
I've only caught a little bit of that stuff, but I caught Glenn Cathy. That guy's he's impressive. He really knows his stuff.
Yeah, that was great.
Hey, Nick, do you care to chime in then on help us come up with a score for Animal Show today by giving us a between 1 and 10 on the guest and then the host?
You know what? Unfortunately, I can't. I was watching the Starbucks branding presentation.
Okay.
And I just clicked on.
Cool. Rob, can we have your score on it since you're back with us?
Yeah, sure. I'll give Paul an 8. I'll give Michael a 5, and I'll give the animal a 2.
Wow. Yay.
Now,
right between the eyes.
Can we add up the 5 and the 2 since he is one and the same and give him a 7?
No, he's not that good today.
Where was he missing? He needs this input.
Oh, he gets it. Don't worry.
No, you know what? He was rattled by all the commotion on the lines. He comes unglued with that stuff.
I'll tell you what. Here's something. I don't think that sometimes questions are yeses and nos. And I know it's an attempt to be able to get to move the conversation along. But, you know, I would suggest that very little in our business is yes or no.
I agree.
I don't know. Maybe the animal is more comfortable with the Dr. Phil and Oprah topics and getting back into the real meaty recruiting stuff threw him off.
Now, Rob, I can refigure last week's menopause show score if you'd like to. If you'd like to chime in on that.
What was the average there?
Last week.
That was
score?
A worthy discussion. Don't knock it.
And there's all kinds of worthy discussions. I mean,
I'm happy to talk about lawn chairs and outdoor furniture if you want.
Hey, if I've got the gout, can we discuss that? Because I'm feeling bad.
I just wish that we could have, for the record during the show, very clearly that Paul is not desperate. He's not looking for a wife tomorrow. And, you know, that wasn't what I wanted everybody to hear.
You know, I tell you, Paul, you know, I'm at the age now where half of my friends are now divorced.
Yeah, because we talked about this, remember? Not too
long
ago.
And I tell you, man, I watch these, you know, and I hear stories every couple of days about who ran into who, and I feel for you. That's not a crowd that I'd like to be fighting through right now. I'm happy to have my wife and three kids.
Hey, guys, my daughter's got a rash. Can we talk about that?
That
depends
might
on where
be a
it
bit
is,
personal.
I guess.
That might be a bit personal. That kind of threw us off rash discussions. I'm thinking, no. Hey, question for Nick Livingston.
Yes.
Nick, what do you do? Tell us about yourself. What's your Twitter account? What's your how can we hook up with you on LinkedIn?
I'm playing around with Twitter. I don't know. I got two. I have one a little bit more personal in Livingston, and then I have another kind of a digital sourcer, more business-related queue. I work at MTV Networks here in New York, and I oversee recruitment technology and sourcing.
Awesome. It's a small world. Oh, geez, 15 years ago, I would say, we did a big project at MTV, a big billing effort there, and I got to come visit and had a great time in New York.
There you go, placing contractors or
yeah. I think at one time we may have had 15 guys working in there. It was a big JD Edwards effort.
Okay.
And we had to bring in people from all over the country, and it was you know, I'm here in Indiana, so we were used to the cost of living here, and then it was a kind of a world of shock putting people up in Manhattan.
I was going to say, well, a good margin probably as well.
Yeah,
$35 drinks.
Yeah. Well, you just got to
know
where to go.
How much is a drink? How much is a drink in Manhattan nowadays?
I mean, depending on where and when, if you're in the Times Square area, it could be $7-$8 for just a beer, let alone cocktails.
Yeah,
alcoholism rate.
We went to a fun place called Puglia's
Italian restaurant and had the best time. It was the project was kind of winding down, so it was a send off party, and boy, it was a great time. I remember a bologna sandwich was like $14.95.
Huh. Oh my god! Yeah, you got to get out of Times Square though.
What's going on?
Yeah, we're our offices are right in the smack of Midtown, so we have a cafeteria here. We can eat for pretty reasonably, but you know, if you get downtown, there's some that you can eat well for cheap.
Do you know Steve Levy?
I don't.
Levy Recruits. Levy Recruits on Twitter. You ought to hook up with him.
I mean, I've heard the name and I know the handle. We've not met yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, you ought to hook up with him. So what's your Twitter handle?
In Livingston.
What? In Livingston?
Yeah, in Livingston.
Okay.
Cool. Too bad you don't
have
hook
up with
Steve.
What's that?
I said, too bad you don't have a score for the show. I'm thinking it's going to end up coming in the higher end, except for Rob's score here. That might weigh Animal down a little bit. Do you listen to the Animal Show from time to time, Nick?
No, I do. It's almost a weekly thing. I just usually stream it on my computer because I'm taking calls and that kind of thing. So.
Well, that's cool.
Nick, take the request off your Twitter follows. I just tried to follow you. Take it off.
I got it locked down. I'm more managing our. I focus more during the day on the MTV Networks Jobs Twitter account. We're seeing some success there, and I feel like I'm more focused on kind of professional accounts than my personal stuff right now. But I try to throw in tweets every once in a while.
There you go. So you like Twitter then for recruiting?
Yeah, I mean, on the corporate side of things, you know, with RSS feeds these days and being able to syndicate jobs for free to the Indeeds and the Simply Hired and the Twitters and Facebooks, it's cost effective. It's really pretty easy to do. You just have to kind of be mindful of and keep an eye on them. And again, we don't just syndicate the jobs to the feeds. We also try to interact a bit with the candidates. And while we don't respond to every shout out or you know, question to us, we try to engage and, you know, splice in some news and events and that type of thing. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm trying to find your MTV Networks Twitter
MTV
account.
Networks Jobs is the handle.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I sent you a request there on the in Livingston one. Anything else going on, anybody? Anything interesting? Anywhere?
Yeah, I want to get back to Maureen's stuff on Sources Unleashed since I brought it up. I'd be curious to know everyone's opinion.
Okay.
Well, there's a string running over there. Oh, I'm sorry. You mean everyone's opinion here?
Yeah. It's more important here than over there, Maureen. You know that.
Okay.
Maureen likes to post softball questions to gather support for her.
No, really?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I didn't post that.
That was my
outside
point
of
speaking. I'm sorry.
I had nothing to do with that question.
So what is the topic then on the thing over there, Rob?
Maureen, can you paraphrase for the group?
Well, basically, one of the members came in and said, "You guys, watch out for this." And then he put the words up that somebody had on their website. What was the name of the company that had it up on their website? Do you remember,
Rob? I can't recall. No.
Anyway, basically it said, recruiters, don't send us resumes that we can find on the boards or LinkedIn or blah, blah, blah. We'll consider them a gift to us from you. And everybody got their panties bunched up, and the conversation just is going on and on and on about it over there.
I could not work with a client that had that policy.
Okay. That was most of the responses. Why couldn't you work with a client with that policy, Jerry?
Because if I introduce a candidate, their first thing is to go through and see if they should have already had that candidate but didn't. But thanks for reminding me, and we'll take it from here.
Good point. Now, Rob, what do you say to that?
Well, I've responded with an opinion. I think I understand the intent of what they were trying to do. I just think it was executed poorly. Most corporations, as you know, have a policy, most, not all, right, have a policy of ownership of candidates for a period of time. I think it usually ranges 6 to 12 months, right? So if you submit a candidate as an agency, you've got ownership of that candidate in the database regardless if they do something with it or not. I think the question is, if I've got a corporate recruiting function that's mining all those active channels, then strategically I'm a lot smarter if I've got a relationship with some strategic agencies that I say, hey, we've got those channels covered. Let's not overlap and replicate our efforts. We really need you to go where our recruiters can't get to because of, as you said, time or B, expertise. So
but
philosophically,
though,
I sort of get what they're saying, but I just think it was poorly executed. That's all.
But see, Rob, what about when I go to my, say I'm in person at my client's office, and he says, hey, Jerry, there's this superstar guy that we just, we had to merge a couple of divisions, and it turns out that this one guy popped up that we're going to have to let him go. He's a great guy. And I connect with that guy, and he is just right for this position at Rob's company. And I get him over to you, having no pre-thought about, well, he might be on LinkedIn, or he might be on Career Builder, or you may have found his job or his resume through some resume spider. If my intent had nothing to do with where you may have found him, I submit him to you, and then turns out, well, yeah, he sent his resume in here 4 months ago, but nobody spoke with him.
I'd pay the fee. Short answer is I'd pay the fee.
Okay.
The longer answer is I'd ask the candidate, hey, have you ever worked with Company X in the past? What transpired, all the rest? I can tell you I've done analysis in the past. I'm not going to name the company name.
Yeah.
But the number of hires we made from agencies where that candidate had a profile under our nose in our own database, you'd be surprised how large that, but you probably wouldn't be surprised. And then to take it even one step further, the number of hires we made from agencies in the past where that person had a profile on a major job board, that was horrendously large as well. So I'm not begrudging the effort.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying it is just a more strategic way, I think, of aligning all your sourcing strategies, be it agency, RPO, social media, whatever, is what I'm proposing is would have been the smarter intent. But I'd still pay the fee because if not but for you, we would have never realized, even if it was under our own nose. Bad for us.
Yeah, and regarding the but for idea that all of us recruiters maintain, a bone that I have to pick with most recruiters and even people I know and work with, we seem to have these two rules, one of which always seems to suit our purpose, whether it's the, hey, Rob, I introduced this candidate 6 months ago to you. Well, then you're using the time ownership approach. However, when I introduce someone that was already sent in by another agency 6 months ago, then I'm going to pull out the, but for my efforts, you wouldn't have had renewed interest in this candidate. So there are these two distinctly different rules of thumb, and I think too many recruiters use both of them. I don't expect my clients, I don't have any one-year guaranteed ownership of candidate. I never have had that. I believe that if I'm going to introduce someone to you, it's for this job, for consideration now in this opportunity, and if 4 months from now another recruiter sends that candidate in, maybe even for the same position, that it's that stimulus that creates the interest, not my original. And I don't like the two different rules. It's been bugging me for a long time.
I think you've got a perfect topic for another show, because that's one of the biggest bugbears of our industry for the last 50 God knows how
many
years.
It's absurd. Yeah, I can't have one rule that I use in this case and then the exact opposite rule that I'm trying to negate with my first rule being applied in the second situation.
So I'll tell you where I think third party recruiters go wrong on all this particular subject, and Paul hit the nail on the head. If you're more open, upfront, and transparent about how you want to engage at the front part of the relationship, then it takes a lot of this gray space out of the way. But I get too many recruiters that are just trying to sling mud at a wall, hoping it'll stick. Now, that's changed a little bit over the years in different markets and different companies and different industries, but there's universally, I find, too much transactional work going on with both corporate recruiters and third-party recruiters. There I don't see the value. So I'm not paying just agency, third-party recruiters. Corporate recruiters are just as guilty.
Mm-hmm. See, talking about, you know, source of candidate and where their profiles are, et cetera, I try to make sure that my approach encompasses all of that so I don't miss the readily available person, say, on a job board, or the person who you are only going to find if you're a member of some old Usenet group that's now migrated to an email-only type of chat forum.
Jerry, do you see my point of view, though?
If
I'm a corporate leader who has a $10 million budget and a whole pile of resources to go solve a problem for a company, or even I could scale that down to say I've got a $50,000 budget, the last thing I want to do is overlap my time, energy, and resources and money with my strategy because I'm not getting back the appropriate bang for my buck.
Oh, sure.
That's the core issue here.
So possibly then having a longer discussion with a new client and recruiter, those two should get together and say, hey, these are my three main areas of sourcing, and chances are we've probably saturated that whole area. What approach are you going to take that's different?
Thank you. Now I'm having a strategic discussion versus a transactional discussion. Hallelujah.
Well, most recruiters aren't having a strategic conversation with their client. They're having a, what kind of person do you need, and what's your email address?
That's a tactical conversation.
Yeah.
Who cares?
You know, an interesting thing, I mentioned this big client that I'm currently recruiting for. They're a global company. They've got positions posted all over the place. I interviewed a candidate a month ago, and they've been looking for this same kind of person for 6 months. It's been a dire, pressing need for an electromagnetic design engineer for their motors division.
Gee, how many of those are there out there?
Well, one of them that is out there, when I spoke with him, he said, yeah, I saw that job on CareerBuilder, and I sent him my resume like 3 weeks ago.
Wow.
Well, I called my client, and I, you know, this is the one who I've got a great relationship with her, and I said, hey, I found a guy that he hasn't heard back from you, nothing's happened. Who knows where his resume even is? And she said, well, yeah, if you're the one telling me about him, because the candidate you're describing, I haven't heard of this person. Long story short, they have their job order responses outsourced to like a sourcing company. So they're paying a sourcing firm to sort through all of their job responses.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's just crazy wrong.
The guy was already midstream on an offer anyway, so it didn't go much further than that. But, you know, I mentioned to her, I said, you know, if you end up having to pay me a fee for this, if I were you, I would take it directly out of whatever you're paying your response management firm's fee.
Oh,
this has now happened two times with this company. So even if you're posting your jobs, and the match was glaringly obvious. I mean, how could any company even be providing that service? It just, I don't know, just an interesting, you know, tidbit from, you know, stories from the field, I guess, on that one.
Hey, there's a radio show title, Stories from the Field.
Mm. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what the world needs, everybody, is one more blog show, eh?
Well guys, Animal would like that. He's always looking for stories.
I love my clients, and I have to take care of them this afternoon. So I'm going to be taking off. But hey, I've enjoyed the conversation.
Hold on a second, hey Rob.
Yeah.
Hey, how? Just take a guess. The percentage of firms that pitch you, regardless of for what skill set you guys are needing, they think you need help with. How many of the pitches are any good?
5%.
Holy moly.
Do you find that they all sound the very same?
Of course they do. That's why I say 5%. Only 5% stand out as different. Taking the time, understanding my business, trying to understand my need. And also probably it doesn't help that I come from the agency side, so I see right through a lot of their approaches.
Yeah. Yeah, not to get into a my own personal. I kind of get on a soapbox every once in a while when the topic comes up about your presentation to a potential client, you know, as a third party person. But you know, I myself got into this rut of just really sounding like a guy that was calling just to see if I could play, and it just frustrated me because, you know, I found that my presentation really wasn't that much different than the last person or the next person.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know, so I think everybody needs to challenge themselves to make sure that when they're introducing their service to a potential client that there is something that makes you stand out from the God knows how many hundreds of recruiters are calling. I mean,
make it creative and different.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I'll leave you with a story. This is back in Australia days.
Before you leave us, Rob, contact the animal. Would you come on the show? You'd be a great guest.
No, I already spoke to him about that. I said no. I gracefully declined.
I see.
Tell us with the story.
Okay, go on with the story.
Yeah, I'll tell you the story. So back in Australia agency days, there's a guy that I work with who just was dying to try and do business with this one company. He tried every possible way to get to the decision maker, to get on the vendor list, and he just had no luck. He actually went out, bought a homing pigeon, wrote a message and then a little note on the homing pigeon, delivered the homing pigeon to this guy's office with a message saying basically, look, I've tried every way to get hold of you. If you're interested in doing business with me, this is just an example of how far I'll go in the way of being creative to fill your roles. Please let the homing pigeon go. If it comes home, I know you're interested. If not, guess what? The homing pigeon came home. That to me is...
Is that a true story?
It's a true story. So that
I didn't even know they had homing pigeons anymore. I thought the last one died.
Oh, well, this is...
Cincinnati Zoo.
This is 10 years ago.
Carrier pigeon.
The point is...
Oh, is it a carrier pigeon, Jerry? Sorry.
The point is, would that not stand out in your mind as the 5% or less?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, Rob...
That's a great story.
Hey, Rob. You sound like somebody that can offer me an opinion on something, and I don't necessarily want to just ask it here. And
you can ask it publicly or privately. I don't care.
Yeah, I just want to send you an email about it.
Sure. I can't give you my email out over.
I'll tweet to you.
Look at my LinkedIn profile.
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, as a disclosure for everyone who's going to listen to this and the recording, don't send me bloody homing pigeons.
Then I don't need to send you an email. That was my brilliant idea. No, my friends have homing pigeons, and they take them all over the Midwest, and then they all drive back to wherever they are, and they sit there and drink beer till the birds get there. And it's pretty interesting. Okay, well, Rob, I'll send you a note, and I'm not going to try to do business with you. I just want you.
No,
input.
Look, I encourage it. I respond to every voicemail, every email that gets sent to me by any third-party recruiter out of just professional courtesy and respect. But don't expect me to fall over and say, where have you been all my life?
You do realize you just shouldn't have said that, right?
Oh, no. They can, but you better be different. Otherwise,
because
you're just going to get
the
same
time anyway.
Rob's going to wake up to 679 email messages in his inbox tomorrow.
okay, yeah, I suppose I opened that door now. I can't close it, huh?
I think we're giving Animal a little more credit than...
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, well,
there's just the six of us.
Yeah, so don't go
that
tweeting it,
guys. Pigeon.
Don't
carrier
go tweeting it.
Not left.
No,
Maureen, you better not be tweeting
tweet
this part.
What'd you say?
You better not be tweeting this part.
Oh no, I didn't tweet anything.
All right, what's your
Mumsword.
What's your Twitter address then, Rob?
I don't have one.
All right, man, I'll track you down. Don't you worry about it. Let me see. All right. Hey guys, I've enjoyed the phone call. This has been the longest after show in the history of the Animal Show. And you guys were all there, complete with homing pigeons and everything.
Yeah.
And a rash.
In the rash. So have a super, super, super afternoon, and I've got some clients that want to know what I'm up to today, so I'm going to give them a call and see if I can help
them
out.
All right, bye, everyone.
Thanks,
Thank
everybody.
You.
Guys.
Thanks, guys. Been fun.
Yeah, thanks, Rob.
Later.
See you, Jeremy. Later, Paul.
See you.